on Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. The Predators in action on the road tonight in LA. Puck drop 9 o'clock, late one tonight. We'll chat with Elliot Friedman about that in 1 hour. But joining us now is ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, I fear that you may have been facing the elements like we have been the last few days. You've been staying warm. Have you been staying ice and snow free?
I've been ice and snow free. I've been staying warm. My issue was that when this all started, I was not in Nashville, which means that I could not get back to Nashville, which is why I appreciate you guys rescheduling. You know, where I'm from, I think we handle 7 inches a little bit differently.
Plot out the way and get out there and go to work.
This is a beautiful spring day in New England, and it has shut down the city of Nashville for nearly a week now. But we appreciate your flexibility and glad that you got home safe, Tim. And we were looking at Mike Sando's article in The Athletic, and of 8 vacancies in the NFL, head coaching vacancies, New England included, he ranked the Tennessee Titans at 7th. Yahoo Sports has a piece coming out here later on today that ranks the 7 vacancies, not including New England, and the Titans are ranked 6th. Why do you think it is that maybe the perception of the Titans head coaching vacancy isn't a better one than those surveys might indicate?
I'm guessing that the reason is like what's there, meaning, okay, there's a general manager already there. So like that would not be good for somebody that wanted more control, or, hey, there's going to be most likely, or at least at a minimum, competition at the quarterback position. So you're not walking into a situation where, you know, there's a quarterback that you know can play, or a quarterback on a rookie contract that you can build around, so that, or that you're sure that you can build around, I should say. And so I think probably, you know, those factors, and then, you know, people will get into the details of where the salary cap is. I would just kind of say this as people, you know, rank these spots. I would love to know where the Houston Texans were ranked in terms of coaching availabilities and priority lists a year ago, because I can't imagine it was at the very top.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And I know that the Texans were so bad for so long, but I think a lot of Titans fans look at where the Texans were last season. Now the Texans are like the belle of the ball this season. And all it takes is bringing a good head coach with good coordinators and a really good quarterback in the draft. But you bring up the quarterback position, and that's something that Mike Sando referenced. That's something that is referenced in a Yahoo Sports article of uncertainty, or as you mentioned, competition at the quarterback position. What is it about Will Levis that maybe doesn't inspire a ton of confidence for some potential head coaches?
Well, I think the big thing would be this. He missed some time this year. So there's already, I guess the evidence of, well, can he be healthy for an entire season? Like one of the best things about, you know, quarterbacks and their is just their availability. I know I've said this before, like my brother as the example, look, he played whatever it was, 18, 20 years in the National Football League, in large part because he never ended a season on the injured reserve. Like that matters. So like Eli Manning, you look at his career, he was always available and healthy. And so, and then you compare that to other guys that maybe have talent and they've shown, you know, kind of moments where, hey, they could be really good. Jimmy Garoppolo, for example. But he just has too many times where he's not available. So like there's already evidence of that. And then there's not a big enough sample size of really good quarterback play to say, yeah, you're 100% sure that this can be your guy. And so I think that's really what it is. It's still the unknown. I would push back on anybody that says like, hey, they know for sure. 'Cause you really don't know for sure until, you know, you see a guy do it for multiple seasons.
I thought I knew for sure about Jordan Love. Mm-hmm. Learned my lesson.
Right? No, that's a great example, because his first start against Kansas City, whatever that was, a couple years ago, was not good at all. and then didn't really play. And then the beginning of the year was not great. And he looks so comfortable and confident and honestly good right now that you could almost argue he just looks like a totally different player.
Yeah, he does. And, you know, Tim, I was saying about Will Levis. It's just listen, this guy wasn't supposed to be the starter this year. I think Vrabel had in his mind that we're going to ride with Ryan Tannehill as long as we possibly can because he gave them a better opportunity to win. But we understand that because of that offensive line, it didn't happen. And now you thrust a young guy in it, into that position. And he has a wonderful first game, but we all knew that that couldn't be, that wasn't sustainable. And he came down the earth, but he always showed you flashes. And that's what we want to see in young quarterbacks. Yeah. Are you showing me something that's going to make me, you know, continue to believe that if we surround you with some good players, when we get this offensive line straight, then you could be the guy. I'm not saying he will be the guy, but surround him with some people, let him have an offseason to really go over whatever offense they're going to implement, and then decide after that, after you see him in a full season, then decide, hey, he is the guy, or maybe we need to be looking for another quarterback.
Yeah, and I think that what you're saying, Jameis, I would agree with, in that I think sometimes you see a guy play his rookie year and you can say, man, we're so far from being able to hand this over to you. And like I think that there've probably been guys where that's been the case. And that's not the situation the Titans are in. I would agree with you in that I think there was enough evidence this year to think, you know what? There's enough to be excited about and kind of look forward to with him, that he's probably is going to be in a situation where he's at a minimum got a shot to compete for it. So yeah, I think that that is totally fair. And if he were to take advantage of that opportunity, win the job, then, and then do a good job with it, then that could happen. Think about what happened in Seattle with Russell Wilson. Like, Matt Flynn was really signed to be the starter, but it wasn't so prohibitive that you couldn't compete for the job. And then Russell won it. And then when he won it, he took advantage of it, and they were in a better spot as an organization because of it.
Yeah, you're right in that regards to, listen, it doesn't have to be set in stone that he is the guy, but at least give him an opportunity to prove to you that he's not the guy. And I don't think he's done that just yet. We're talking with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach at the Innsworth Tigers here in Nashville.
Now, Tim, I appreciate that, teammate. That's 2 weeks in a row, man.
I'm going to keep pubbing it, man. Looking at this team, this roster, and Charles Robinson was on with Rex and Robbie earlier, and he talked about a little about how possibly this could be a 49ers situation in regards to, you know, you got to build the roster back up. You got a good head coach. You got a GM. It took a few years, but they finally, now they're one of the franchises that many look at as a model franchise in regards to their winning. And they've won Super Bowls in the past. We know that. But you're looking at the Titans roster. They're at the bottom now. They're at rock bottom now. You have an opportunity with a second-year GM, a head coach. Let's use this word again, collaborate. You can collaborate and start building this team the way you want it. And it may take a year, it may take two, but ultimately, if you build it the right way, then this is going to be something like San Francisco that's sustainable.
Look, I agree. And I think it's probably frustrating because you look around at the rest of the AFC and you think, well, hey, we want to be good right now. Like, look at all these other, you know, places that are good right now. But look, it's hard to just flip it in 1 year, but people will look at situations like Houston and say, well, hey, it's possible. And, but I don't think that you can look at those places as, you know, the blueprints for, you know, building it the way that you want to build it. And then I think the other aspect of it that is really important, which is why it's important for the head coach and the general manager to be guys that, you know, see things the same way, that are on the same page, is that you need to beat the market in the draft and free agency. And if the market beats you, then you just get crushed, right? And I think that that's probably what happened with A.J. Brown, right? But if you – and then you just look at situations like you bring the Niners up. Well, like, they beat the market with Debo Samuel. They beat the market with George Kittle. They beat the market with their two inside backers. They obviously did a good job, you know, wasn't free agency, but a trade with Christian McCaffrey. They clearly beat the market at quarterback with Brock Purdy. So now they didn't bat 1,000 because they drafted Trey Lance and gave a bunch of draft capital up for him. So I think that, you know, you're not going to ever be perfect, but you need to beat the market in a bunch of these other spots, because you are going to miss at times, like every organization does. And so, yeah, I think that ends up being, you know, like, as we, you know, kind of go back to how, you know, Caroline started this, just about, hey, is this a, like rank this opportunity? Look, there's a really good opportunity for a reset. You're not necessarily walking into a situation completely saddled with a ton. And that, in many regards, is probably more attractive than having something that's forced on you.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck. And, Tim, I was just looking over some of the candidates here. And you've made some interesting points about how a person's stock can really rise and fall. A franchise's stock can rise and fall. But you have a perception that kind of sticks with you in the moment. Let's go back a few years. I would have thought, and I did say this at the time, and maybe I was a little bit biased because he had been at Vanderbilt for a while, and I got to know him a little bit when he was a younger coach. But Ken Whisenhunt, I thought when the Titans hired him as the head coach, was probably the most credentialed coach on the market at the time. He had been an offensive coordinator for a very successful Steelers team. He had taken a team to the Super Bowl as a head coach, offensive coordinator for a good Chargers team when he got the job. And it completely flopped. So I have that same feeling right now, and maybe I'm crazy, about Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn, to me, is very similar to Whisenhunt. He's got a great track record. He's got success as a head coach, Super Bowl ring as a defensive coordinator for Seattle, and he's had a good run here as the defensive coordinator for the Cowboys. It, you know, if you take away the recency bias of that last act that they just had, his defense didn't look very good that day. But I see a lot of credentials there, but I don't hear a lot of buzz about him as a head coach.
So, well, first off, I would say this. I would agree with you on Ken Whisenhunt. And, like, to add to your list of, like, why, you know, it was like, hey, this makes a lot of sense. He was a former player that played a position that, you know, knew about the passing game, knew about the run game, had, you know, had a great rapport with players, was creative by nature in terms of, you know, just ideas. And from, like, he wasn't just like a copycat type of coach. He was fantastic. And, you know, I think sometimes you can just say, look, it doesn't really, you know, just, it doesn't work out. So, like, you look at Dan Quinn. So, cause, like, did it work out in Atlanta? Well, like, obviously not how they wanted it to work out, but he's been really good a bunch of different times. And I bet you, I do think that his name is out there, you know, just because, you know, we're not hearing the names. I think sometimes we hear the names that are newer names, you know, Ben Johnson, Mike Kafka, you know, guys like that, that, you know, their names have not been in the hiring cycle, you know, in previous years. And I think there is a number of reasons for that. Sometimes it's, you know, that individual's agent that wants to make sure that they know that their client is on the radar now and is in the mix now. Whereas if it's been somebody that has been in the mix, you don't hear their name as much. Like Terrell Austin's a good example of that. He's been a coach in the NFL for a long time, been a coordinator for a long time, had a lot of success. I think that a lot of people want to talk to him and would consider hiring him. But he's been through a bunch of interviews. And so I think that his buzz, you know, maybe isn't what, you know, one of these guys that's a new name in the cycle, you know, maybe generates, you know, during while this happens. So I think that Dan Quinn is absolutely somebody that anybody that has an opening, you know, including a team like the Seahawks, you know, should consider.
I was going to ask, because he did an interview with the Titans yesterday, and specifically, where do you think it went wrong for Quinn in the post Super Bowl? Because I looked, some people may not remember this, because it's easy to say, well, you know, they lost that Super Bowl and they were never the same. But they did come back with a good year the next year and won a playoff game that year and then kind of leveled off. So what do you think went wrong with Dan Quinn's run in Atlanta?
Well, I mean, I think his quarterback got older. You know, I think that was part of the issue. And I just would kind of say this, like, you know, there's 32 teams. One wins it all, right? So, like, 31 other teams are disappointed. And I do think sometimes, like, the standard, like, Sean Payton's won one Super Bowl. Mike McCarthy's won one Super Bowl. Like, there are a lot of these coaches that they have won one Super Bowl. So, like, does that mean they, when they, you know, got knocked out in a divisional round or a wild card round, and, you know, nobody's really paying attention to the fact that, you know, their left guard, you know, got knocked out week 17, and then they were playing some kid off the street who was completely overmatched. You know, like, no one goes back and remembers that. And I will say, I'll never forget listening to an interview from Bill Parcells talk about why he lost his Super Bowl against the Green Bay Packers. And, like, I don't know, like, I think I was maybe expecting to say, like, hey, we couldn't contain, you know, Favre or this and that. And he's like, our L5 on kickoff was out of the game. And was like, wait a second, what? Like, he's literally talking about, like, you know, while, like, when we watch games on TV, we're running promotions for whatever, CSI Miami, you know what I mean? People barely paying attention. And he's saying, like, look, our L5 was out of the game and we gave up a kickoff return because the guy who was in his spot, you know, didn't make the play. And so, like, that would be one more Super Bowl maybe for Bill Parcells, at least in his mind. And so I think sometimes we just have a standard for what Dan Quinn's success should be, or Mike McCarthy's, or Sean Payton's, or whomever's, you know, Pete Carroll's, that is maybe just unrealistic.
Okay, so let's roll that into something else you mentioned, because you have a Dan Quinn who's got a history, right? But he's got experience. There's ups, there's downs, but he's had a lot of experience. But you just mentioned another huge dynamic that happens every year. And Bobby Slowick, to me, would be the headliner this year. It's a guy that can't do anything wrong. He's the hot name. Everybody's talking about him. But how do you try to weigh that when you're interviewing a guy like that, to know that he's really the right guy to be a first-time head coach? Because that's tricky. Because I've seen some hot names that got jobs and then just never did anything.
Here's what I would say, and I think I've said this to you guys before. John Fox, who has taken, what did he take, two different teams to a Super Bowl? Is that right? Two different teams to a Super Bowl, which there is a really short list of people on the planet that have ever done that. So he went with the Broncos and he went with the Carolina Panthers. He said to me one time, I spent a lot of time with him when we worked together at ESPN, and he said, you know, and he was the defensive coordinator at the Giants when they went to a Super Bowl. And he said to me, you know, it's interesting. A lot of times you get a head coaching position in the National Football League because you are a great coordinator. And he said, you know, part of the thing about becoming a coordinator is you a lot of times sit in a dark room, watch film, design a game plan, and then only implement it with one side of the ball. He said, and then because you've done that, you become a head coach somewhere. You get an opportunity, you're the hot name, and you get hired as a head coach. And then the thing that you were really good at doing, you don't do anymore. You just don't do it. And you then are basically, and I'll use different words. He said, then you are just shoveling manure all day long in your new role as head coach. That's what you do all day. And so it just kind of was interesting to me. I felt like walking away from that conversation with him, I thought, I think as a league, we probably place too much emphasis on, are you good at devising a game plan? Are you a creative coordinator? Are you like, it's like, is that important? Sure. I think you've got to have creative ideas, but if you boil it down to, are you a good coordinator and you're not good at managing people, good at have an extensive network of other coaches? Do you listen to other people's ideas? Do you create an environment that is, you know, unselfish and hardworking, and all these other things that maybe don't go into, hey, are you a good coordinator? And like, if you don't do those things well, then you're probably not going to be successful as a coach.
Interesting. That's an interesting perspective. And last one for me, Tim, quickly. I think we all know that Mike Vrabel is very widely respected around the league, and I think he's known as a good coach. Why hasn't he gotten any interest in interviewing for these head coaching vacancies across the league?
Yeah, I think that, again, he would be a guy, because he's been a head coach, that if he talks to somebody, I don't know that everybody in his camp will be making sure that everybody knows about it immediately. And then I think there might be a perspective on from his part to say, like, I might just take a breath here. Like, I don't need to go chase the first opportunity that's out there for me. I mean, I don't know that, but I do think that there are times that guys are finishing up being head coaches somewhere and they're exhausted. Bill Polian said one time they counted, and I think like Tony Dungy had more media appearances than the president of the United States by like, jeez, 27 times in any given calendar year. And he's like, the demands on these positions are significant and guys are tired at the end of, at the end of the year. And I think sometimes are okay with taking a breath.
I know sometimes we do, you know, compare a before and after when you get elected into office as the president and then 8 years later when you're done in office and you see the gray hair and the wrinkles. We need to do that with a head coach in the NFL, because I'm sure the stress is it weighs on you, I'm sure. Tim Hasselbeck.
Hey, I had hair. I had hair 3 weeks ago before I became head coach. Amazing.
3 weeks at the high school level, man.
Already.
Hey, Tim, you look even better now than you did 3 weeks ago.
Oh, man.
Oh, I appreciate it. Don't do a before and after on me. It won't be pretty.
Tim, we appreciate it. We'll chat with you next week, and thanks for being flexible with us. Stay warm out there.
See you guys.
All right, we'll react to what Tim had to say there and, of course, get back into your phones. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we're brought to you by Zen Sports, and we love our people over at Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.